This is no Greek chorus, my friends, but it might well be. For like a Greek chorus punctuates the action of the play on a stage, so too does the typical American baseball crowd underline play on the diamond. Living 1949 holds up its radio mirror today as sides are chosen in Sandlot, Stadium, and Ballpark to reflect 25 minutes of America's national sport in a drama document entitled... And here, just in from the bleachers and pinch-hitting for Ben Grauer, is your narrator, Ken Banghart.
Greetings, America. Ever since the days of the cavemen, children of all ages have been playing games in which a ball, that is to say, a spheroid, was thrown and caught. We know this from crude drawings in the caves of France, and from human figures playing ball in sculptures on the walls of Egyptian temples 40 centuries old. But it's the modern game, the American game, the game as we know it, which really intrigues us. And for the origins of that, suppose we ask for an assist from the expert, this gentleman in shirt sleeves in the press box over the dugout, the sports writer.
Thanks, Ken. Where it all began is as much disputed as Tunney's so-called long count. Some say baseball was invented, just like the airplane, and invented by Abner Doubleday, a 20-year-old cadet at Cooperstown, New York, 10 years before the California Gold Rush. The story goes, as the liberal imagination pictures it...
Well, let's go, fellas.
I say, fellows, what do you say to a game of three old cats?
Wait a moment. There are too many of us, you see. How about a game of baseball instead?
Baseball?
Now, instead of six players, as in three old cats, we'll put 11 on a side.
11?
You mean like in cricket?
Yes, 11. We'll place four men yonder... Call it the outfield.
A man
on each base, you see, an infielder between first and second base, and second and third, and then we'll put the home base to the left of where the batsman addresses the pitch.
Let me finish.
Any man running to a base can be retired, you see, by being hit with a thrown ball.
Oh. Well, wonderful.
Capital.
Bully.
Yes, let's play baseball.
It wasn't as simple as that, of course, but that's one version. Abner Doubleday later distinguished himself as a major general in the Mexican and Civil Wars. They got a monument to him in Cooperstown. On the other hand, there's another school, the We Don't Believe Doubleday Dude It School, which begins by poo-pooing this first story. Quote from the New Encyclopedia of Sports.
Pooh-pooh. Doubleday probably never played baseball in his entire lifetime.
But whatever its origin, it looks from here as though some form of baseball was played even in the early days of the colonies. By 1845, it got some standard rules from the Knickerbocker Baseball Club of New York, the first such organization in the world. A guy named Alec Cartwright, a draftsman and a surveyor, laid them out.
The ball must be pitched for the bat. Three balls being struck at and missed, the last one caught, is out. A ball knocked outside the range of first...
What's more, Cartwright put the diamond in baseball, changing the shape of the playing field from a square. Southerners picked up the baseball habit from the North during the Civil War.
Hey, Yankee, what's that our game y'all playing?
This here game's baseball, Rebel.
Well, tone, phone, and hominy grits. If I'm not, I'm going to take that to our game back in Mississippi.
In 1858 came the first paid admission. Appetite whetted by a tidy profit, the Cincinnati Reds became in 1869 the first salary team in the game's history. It was this same team along about that time that gave baseball its uniform.
Hey! Look!
Well, I swan. They're dressed in Knickerbockers.
Yeah. You, boy!
These latter 1800s gave us our first professional baseball association, the birth of the National League. Believe it or not, the first game under electric lights was in 1883. And before the new century was a month old, the American League was formed. I don't have to tell you what's happened since.
Baseball firmly established as a national institution played by almost everyone everywhere.
Hey, Mickey, come on out. Let's play ball.
As big business.
In 1948, 70 million people paid admission to ball games.
With hardly enough hours in the day for it. Night game tonight, doubleheader, with a ladies' day.
Hit it hard, shall we?
Yes, and even with a high commissioner in a hall of fame, the only big business which opens every year with a presidential blessing. Buried in the voices you're hearing, the voices that throughout the baseball season resound from the bleachers of the nation, lies the secret behind the almost unparalleled popularity of baseball. It's this.
Baseball is an American legend, nurtured where nurturing counts, in the hearts of the people.
And it touches some birthday of almost every American boy.
Gosh, what is it, Dad?
Well, open it and see.
Jeepers, a catcher's mitt.
It echoes from every sandlot and serves as a threat to culture.
Oh, jeez. It's almost 2 o'clock. I gotta scram.
Scram now? Yeah. Cripes, what for?
I gotta go to my piano lesson.
Oh, for crying out loud. With two men on, you gotta play a piano yet. What are you, a sissy or something?
It follows juniors into youth and their first job. And a peculiar fact, unmarked by the historians, is that the opening of the ball season at the local park is invariably coincident with a sudden increase in the obituary statistics.
You wanted to see me, Jane?
Yes, sir, Mr. Betzel.
Well, what can I do for you?
Well, sir, you see, I just got word that my grandmother died.
Yes, James, anticipating such a crisis in your family affairs, I've taken the liberty of expressing my sympathy by purchasing 2 tickets to the opening game this afternoon. Would you care to accompany me?
Why, gee, Mr. Bedsell.
Baseball, common meeting ground for young and old, the melting agent in our melting pot, borrower of the Dem from democracy.
Dem bomb!
The great equalizer. This game called baseball is a kingmaker. The kings it makes number their subjects in millions, and from them win such devotion and loyalty as few real kings have ever attained. The names of baseball's great are heard through the years like an everlasting crack of the ball on the bat.
Old Hoss Radburn, Christy Mathewson, Rube Waddell, Tinker to Evers to Chance, Walter Johnson, Grover Cleveland Alexander, Ty Cobb, Connie Mack, John McGraw, Lou Gehrig.
But we would need a cannonade of bats to salute the greatest name of them all.
The Babe.
Yes, the unparalleled king of SWAT, Babe Ruth.
Come and listen to a tale I will tell of a hero we all love so well. He played ball, what a hitter, what a man. And he'll never be forgotten through our land.
The 1920s that saw Bobby Jones on the golf links, Dempsey in the ring, Red Grange on the football field, saw Babe Ruth, the home run king, leading the New York Yankees in a winning streak that gave them 6 pennants in the Yankee Stadium, ever after called the house that Ruth built. There never was a man in baseball, and probably never will be again, like George Herman Ruth. Gargantuan, his barrel-shaped upper body tapered to a slender point by the time it reached his feet, and he swung this huge mass like a top. Some of the records he made have never been broken.
The most home runs, most runs batted in, most bases on balls, played in the greatest number of World Series games.
Hear the Babe, here's the Babe, hear the frenzied people rave. Send the fielders back against the farthest wall. When he missed, what a miss, all the air around him hissed. When he hit the ball, there was no ball at all.
One of the things they remember the Babe for best was the last World Series he played in the third game against the Chicago Cubs in 1932. The Cubs were riding Ruth hard. In fact, when he came to bat in the latter part of the game, the whole Cub bench came to the edge of the dugout and began to shout at him. There he stood, the great Babe himself, with every Chicago man that could stand jeering him.
Don't forget to wave, Holly, too.
Give it in his ear. There
you go, Chuckles.
Uncle Charlie's got him.
Bob, what's the matter?
The first pitch from Chicago's Charlie Ruth. Strike one. The Babe holds up one finger, indicating it's just one strike. The pitch comes fast again, and Ruth watches it go by for the second strike. Unmoved, the Babe merely holds up two fingers. The next two balls are wide, and then the mighty Babe, the incredible Babe, hurt perhaps by the jibes from the Cubs and the Chicago crowd against him, pulls off the most disdainful act of his career. He replies to the taunts and jeers by pointing high towards center field, the farthest point from home plate.
Yeah, he thinks he's going to belt the next one for a homer.
Here comes the pitch. And up goes the ball. Up, 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 and smack into the center field bleacher.
Here's the Babe, here's the Babe. Hear the frenzied people rave. He made our hearts beat faster than the band. Gone the cheers, gone the thrill, and his booming bat is still. But he'll never be forgotten through the land.
Perhaps no American game has left the giant imprint upon our personal and social life as baseball. Take language. Writes Robert Smith in his book, Baseball,
it belongs to the American people to a greater degree than many of them know. Some who have never held a stitched ball and could not observe a single inning without utter mystification or boredom still use the language of baseball in daily intercourse.
For the truth of this, we have only to keep our ears open wherever we go.
Poor kid's got two strikes on him already.
If you just stopped it.
Jim never got to first base with her. Mark my word.
Olson? Well, I'd say that man's got plenty on the ball. The more I see him...
Always pulling a grandstand play. That's the trouble with it.
Fat screwball? Why, what I think I hear...
Hundreds of sports writers on newspapers and magazines and thousands of columns of newsprint are devoted every day in the year to baseball. To say nothing about the amount of time consumed reporting its ups and downs on the radio and now documenting it in television. Books are written, movies filmed, plays and musicals produced, sporting equipment sold, all because of baseball. Baseball has inspired some of our most popular verse. You remember?
There was ease in Casey's manner as he stepped into his place. There was pride in Casey's bearing and a smile on Casey's face. And then, responding to the cheers, he lightly doffed his hat. No stranger in the crowd could doubt 'twas Casey at the bat.
And finally, baseball has touched our music. There probably isn't a corner of the land that hasn't heard the reply that Nellie gave her Joe when he wanted to take her to Coney Island.
Take me out to the ballgame. Take me out with the crowd. Oh, I need some peanuts and Cracker Jack. I don't care if I never get back. Let me root, root, root for the whole team.
A big stiff can't stand up.
Hey, somebody please stop being a bit.
Baseball, too, is big business. Behind the crowds that thump and cheer, behind the men who grip the bat and throw the ball, is the money that keeps the game going, and it's big money.
I value my baseball property, the New York Yankees, at something between $6 and $7 million.
That's the way the late Colonel Jacob Rupert put it. Today, with night baseball and with Ladies' Day, the business of baseball is booming, with millionaires as club owners and stars getting as much as $80,000 to $90,000 a season.
Want to hear how this business is operated? The system in which it's organized? Well, listen.
Most baseball stars today are built on the assembly line. Like big industries that have sub-assembly factories, baseball has its farms or training places where it can observe tryouts and put in the kind of quality it wants in its future stars. The Dodgers alone have 25 such farms. It's an intricate system, and it may start, in the case of a potential star, innocently like this, before a high school ball game.
Oh, Johnny.
Yeah, Coach?
How does your arm feel?
Oh, fine, Coach. It's fine.
That's swell. I want you to pitch your best today.
That's what I always do, Coach.
Especially today. I got an idea there's going to be a big league scout out there this time watching you.
Gee, Coach, you really think so?
I sent him a telegram last week. Said he'd be here if he can make it.
Gosh, Coach, I...
Don't let it rattle you now. Just play your customary game.
Usually on a tip, perhaps from a high school or college coach, scouts in the major leagues cover the country. Watch embryo stars play. In the case of Johnny, let's say, the scout is impressed and wires his home office.
Looks as good as Carl Hubbell. Recommend signing him before somebody beats us to it.
And so negotiations begin. If Johnny is under 18, he can't sign a contract himself, so his dad is there.
Mr. Peck, we think your Johnny's got possibilities. But, of course, he needs seasoning.
But
after a year in Class D ball, maybe a year in Class A and a year in Class AAA, who knows, you might step right into the big leagues and a regular job with our club.
Yes, but you don't see...
What's the matter, Mr. Peck? You don't look very happy.
Well, I'm sorry, mister, but... Well, you see, Johnny's mother and myself always figured on Johnny sort of going to college after high school.
Oh, gee, Dad,
So what? College education never hurt anybody. So here's what we'll do. We'll send Johnny to college.
What?
That's right. If you sign with us, we'll pay his way through college. Of course, he won't be able to play ball there. He'll be professional. So it's more time for study.
Well...
And in addition, we'll make you and the missus a gift of $20,000 outright.
But what for?
Well, that's to protect you and us. After all, you'll be looking after him for, so to speak.
This is called the illegal bonus approach, but almost everybody does it. The penalty's only $500. Well, anyway, Johnny goes to college and comes marching, not home, but to the center of tryout activities for the ball club. Could be the Tigers, the Cubs, the Red Sox, any club. The first step in the intricate farm system. Our scene, a place called Dodger Town.
Name, please?
Johnny Peck.
No, and we give you a number instead. You're G-44.
G-44?
11 the stockade, eating the cafeteria. You're assigned to the team wearing green caps. Here's your green cap.
Yeah, but...
Remember, even though you're just a number, we're watching everything you do and writing it down on your record. So don't get the idea you're just an automaton here.
The next day, Johnny's out in the field in his green cap, along with scores of other young hopefuls, getting used to such mechanical devices as bazookas that shoot the balls out for batting practice, machines that measure how far a batter's feet are apart when he bats, or returning fielded balls back to the pitcher's mound like balls in a bowling alley. Hour after hour, coaches fire instruction at him.
When the ball is here, according to this rubber tee on home plate, you'll hit a ground ball. When it's here, you'll hit it over the fence.
Throughout practice, scouts with long boards walk around marking down comments and scores on players. Batting averages, too, are recorded. If Johnny should ever protest...
I have a sore arm today, sir.
Well, here, wear this yellow cap so you won't be marked down for a bad day.
And so it goes until the day arrives when Johnny is finally assigned to one of the lesser teams owned by the club that contest in minor leagues a nation over and which are all part of the farm system. These teams are classified according to the population of the cities they play in.
We begin with Class D for cities up to 150,000 population. Go on up through B, A, A1, AA, and AAA, cities of 3 million.
Whether the farm city is owned or on agreement, the chain always selects the manager and always provides all the players. Johnny may move on up from one class to another, and by the time he reaches AAA, has been pretty well cased.
By then, we know everything there is to know about him, physically, personally, competitively. File starts with the report of the scout who discovered him and ends up with an appraisal of future value. Whether the boy has a big league chance or represents money value only up to A, AA, or AAA. To that end, we may have 50 opinions on him.
Whether Johnny finally makes the big time depends both on his performance and the needs of the club that has him. If the time comes when the club needs a pitcher and Johnny's record is good, the next thing you might hear in the big league stands is...
Come on, Johnny!
Hey, who's that?
Who's that? Johnny Peck, my boy, mister. Oh, just out of the sticks, huh? Well, looks like he has a lot on the ball. Okay, come on, Johnny! Come on, Johnny!
And who knows, Maybe the system, the assembly line, has birthed another baseball genius whose picture will hang over the beds of uncounted American kids who dream the big dream. Whose name someday, in the midst of a World Series game, will thunder from the throats of thousands upon thousands. Come on, Johnny, and never stop echoing on through baseball history.
So are baseball stars made by God and by the management. Both are required to perform the miracle. One of the current headline issues in baseballdom is
the reserve clause. The club owns the player lock, stock, and barrel, is able to retain him indefinitely, trade him or sell him to some other club without his consent, and forbids him to play or negotiate with any other club until he has been released or traded.
This, the key to the entire structure of organized baseball, is being challenged in the courts by Danny Gardella. He's the former outfielder of the New York Giants, suspended for 5 years by Baseball Commissioner Chandler because he left the major leagues in 1946 to play with the so-called Outlaw Mexican League. Gardella's damage suit, charging that he was deprived of his livelihood by the suspension, recently came before a U.S. Court of Appeals, where one of the three judges who ordered a trial declared,
"We have here a monopoly which, in its effect on ball players like the plaintiff, possesses characteristics shockingly repugnant to moral principles that, at least since the war between the states, have been basic in America, as shown by the 13th Amendment to the Constitution, condemning involuntary servitude. The reserve clause results in something resembling peonage of the baseball player."
With the case probably destined for the highest court, what about the people? What do the fans say? The answers are coming back from all the Mudvilles, USA.
How's DiMaggio's sore heel?
Do you suppose the sophomore jinx will hit Alvin Dark of the Braves?
Who's going to play in the World Series?
The people are interested in baseball, not contracts, not court rulings, just baseball. For many, the new baseball season ahead will rule their nights and days. For others, it will mean heroes to worship. Still others, players to heckle, cheer, and advise. For spectator, baseball is a release, almost a purge, the next best thing to participation itself. Where else can a man who's been under the thumb of his boss all day, henpecked by his wife at night, shout his mind or suit himself? Nowhere else but in baseball, the national sport, the people's game. And from the diamonds of New York to the diamonds of California this season, there will not pass a day in the week when this will not be attested in the bleachers of the nation. And the loudest cheers of all will be the screeching voices of the comparatively new fans cascading down over the ball fields. The Nellie Kellys, who, as the song points out, choose baseball over the country's Coney Islands, who always insist that their Joes take them out to the ball game. From the people, on the verge of all that the season of 1949 holds, from the people...
Play ball!
Living 1949 is prepared and presented for the University of the Air by an NBC special program staff under the supervision of Wade Arnold. Lou Haslam writes the script. Your narrator today was Ken Banghart. Music is composed and conducted by Dr. Roy Shields. The song, Ballad for the Babe, was composed and sung by Tom Glazer. This program is directed by Jack Cuney. Our thanks to Sport Magazine for help in research in today's program. We invite you to keep abreast of Living 1949 by listening next week to our regular drama document. Beginning tonight, Horace Heights' original Youth Opportunity Program moves to a new time on NBC. Listen for Height immediately following Gary Moore's Take It or Leave It. Remember, Horace Height follows Take It or Leave It tonight on most of these NBC stations. Robert Warren speaking. This is NBC, the National Broadcasting Company.